hopeful that it's helpful to the committee. It certainly is helpful for me. In years past, we have occasion to discuss specific numbers, and we have, even more importantly, sort of occasion to discuss philosophy and policy and see where we are. So let me start out by saying the state is in pretty good position. We started out, as you know, at the end of the last legislative session with the legislature asking for additional cuts from agencies of 2%, 4%, or up to 6%, except for the Department of Health. The requested cuts there were 4%, 6%, 8%. As you know, I lined item that. I vetoed those. And as my budget sits today, we made the cuts at 6.5% last session, but I'm leaving an excess of about $219 million on the table for the legislature to consider. So as we had some good news, that is, I don't think the cuts were needed. I think it was right to veto them, and I am able to prepare for you for your consideration a budget that doesn't meet everything necessarily I want, but I think it meets the needs of the state. It's conservative, and it addresses also recognizing the last decade the budget grew exponentially. It more than doubled. And that was in part because we had good times, and it was in part because there was some needs that needed to be addressed that hadn't been addressed for many years. But what I wanted to try to do is continue to have a relatively flat budget, recognizing that revenue, while not flat, it's going up a little bit, but it is not an exponential growth in revenue as we look in years ahead. The Craig estimates for 15-16 on revenue are about $3.5 billion. For 17-18, they're about $3.6 billion. So it's going up, as I said, not exponentially. It's a slow trend line upward. I want to touch today on some of the other good news in the state. As you know, we were rated last year as the fourth fastest growing state. And I view that as good news. Some worry we're going to quickly become like Colorado in terms of our population, and I remind people with a population of about 567,000, being fourth fastest growing probably means several people had triplets. No need to get alarmed. But we are growing, and we're growing in other ways. Last year, there was only 11 states in the country that had double-digit growth in international exports. Wyoming was number 7 in that category. We were rated again this year and last year as the state with the number 1 business-friendly tax climate. We received our AAA credit rating a couple years ago, and we have continued to have that highest credit rating. We also recognize that we are the third highest percent per capita with high school diplomas in Wyoming. We also recognize that as states are rated, Wyoming is about number 3 or 4 in terms of people who are not in poverty. So we have done well, and we have, as I said, kept the budget relatively flat despite the fact that we've had to have about $97 million increases just in the Department of Health alone. But almost any evaluation that you look at for the state of Wyoming, we are rated as strong in terms of our taxes. We are rated strong in terms of our businesses. And so I think congratulations is in order for the legislature, which didn't just do this last year or the year before, but historically this legislature has had a policy that is conservative in terms of spending. And as a result, we see that our businesses are doing fairly well, and in some ways they're doing an extraordinarily well. So I want to touch on a couple of priorities, but they're by no means all my priorities, but these are important to me. First is local government. Last budget session, I recommended $135 million for local government. And in the supplemental session, we added another $20 million more. I have asked for an increase of $135 million to $175 million from last budget session. As we had that extraordinary ask of $135 million, my view is that the local government has used it wisely. They've invested in infrastructure. They've continued to make their community strong. And as I've often said, if every community in the state remains strong, the state of Wyoming will be just fine. Local government is where the hard decisions are made on which potholes to fill, how to take care of the businesses that are there, how to make the machinery run. And I think they have done an extraordinary job. And I asked for that $175 million, hoping that in the if that is granted by the legislature, that local government will continue to focus on infrastructure needs in their local communities.
Mr. Chairman, before the governor leaves, Governor, and I think you recommended a 60-40 split, 60% infrastructure, 40 operations. Could you speak a little bit about your philosophy there? And if we were so inclined to do a little bit more towards infrastructure, how would you feel about that?
The recommended split is 40 infrastructure, 60 operations, which we looked at that, and frankly, Mr. Chairman, we looked at it in terms of what historically has been done. But that percentage to me, if it was to flip to 60-40 the other way, or if it was to go 50-50, that is something that I would be open to. As you and I both have discussed in public and privately, the need for infrastructure in our local communities is great. First priority is to get the money, the 175, but that percentage, I am open to other ideas on that percentage. That 40-60 percentage. Of course, the in trying to make decisions on the budget, we had in excess of $500 million in exception requests, and so you have to go through there and prioritize. And I certainly tried to do that, recognizing the needs of our citizens, particularly those who are less fortunate. I tried to put money in areas investment where I think we get a good return on our investment. And one of the areas where I think we get a good return on our investment is with regard to our state employees. As you know, generally, not every case, but generally, state employees haven't had an overall raise for about 4 years. We see this year that base salary has gone down, small amount, but it has gone down. We see higher turnover than we have in years past. And so I have recommended an additional salary for state employees. We also recognize if you compare where we are today to, say, the 2010 budget, we have 225 fewer employees than we did in that budget. So we are asking, in fact, fewer people to do more, and I think they have done a good job. So as we break out the employees, I'm asking for a 2.5% base salary adjustment in 2015 and 16 for executive branch, judicial branch, legislative branch, and UW. We're asking for a 2% base salary adjustment in 2015 for community colleges. The difference between the executive branch and the community colleges is because as we looked at what community colleges have done in the last year and the year before, they have, you know, depending on the place, they have been giving raises. And so we tried to work out a formula that we thought was fair to the community colleges and to the executive branch. On top of that total compensation package, we've asked for retirement based on last year's retirement increase and the proposed retirement increase this year, that is assumed by the state for executive branch, judicial branch, UW, and community colleges. I've also asked for one-time merit funds for the executive branch and UW in both 15 and 16. One of the things I think we've accomplished and have we have work to do, but I think it's gone well, is in terms of employee evaluations. We have high success rate in terms of those being done. I think they are being done more with more attention paid to them than they have in the past. And I think it is important to recognize that work, and that is the reason for the merit funds, is so that the individual agency heads and supervisors can reward those who are doing the most excellent work. The total cost of that employee compensation package is just short of $50 million. It's $49,970,000, and that includes all those branches, and it also includes the absorption of a portion of the retirement. The other area
before we leave that, Governor, Mr. Chairman, and we've had some numbers that are different than yours relative to including the retirement component, and we think that $49 million might be light by $8 or $9 million. Have you had a chance to have our people work with Brett and come up with a final number between us?
I'm not sure that the budget office and LSO have come to an agreement, but we think as of this morning we know why the discrepancy is there, and that is because we have already had built into the budget a percentage of that. In other words, we've already absorbed the 0.25% versus adding the whole thing. So I think that is the point of discrepancy. Like I said, I don't think the LSO and the budget division have worked that out. But we think, based upon the numbers that we've ran as of this morning, that is the reason for the discrepancy in the total number that you have versus the total number we have. But we feel fairly confident, Mr. Chairman, that the $50 million, roughly $50 million versus $58 million, is the right number. But to the extent that there's a discrepancy, it's what we have already included in the retirement versus not having any of it included and added on.
Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Representative Stubbs.
Governor, when, early in the interim, Director Fawcett was talking to us a little bit about salaries, and he noted that because of over the years focusing on that 90% of market, focusing on the Hay study, that there's been a compression in the salary schedules across state government. And as you look forward to these salary increases and the mechanism that you have for distributing them, does it contemplate or does it recognize that sort of problem with the compression of salaries across government, and does it address it?
Yes, Representative Stubson, it was, I'm losing track, but I think it was my first year we addressed, we had X percentage of employees that were below 90% of market, and so we moved them up, and which for them was a good thing, but it did cause this compression issue that you've I think is a real issue. We believe, and Dean Fawcett believes, that the employment compensation package that we're talking about will allow for that compression issue not to be eliminated, but certainly alleviate it so that those above that will have an opportunity for raises across the board, and then on top of that, it can be addressed somewhat by the money for the merit pay if that also is improved.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before we leave the salary issue too, Governor, on the, and you mentioned the 2% for the community colleges and how they were able to give some raises, and yet I've looked at some of the community colleges, and particularly like Central, when I compare them to other people that are getting state raises and or the university and K through 12, we're in a lower bracket. Is there some other information you could provide us as to how you come up with the 2%? It's only 2% for the total biennium versus 5% for the rest.
Yeah, that's correct. It is just the 2% versus 5% for the rest. And like I said, it's not a
perfect... And no retirement either, correct?
It's not a perfect formula, but it is an attempt to recognize that community colleges have been giving raises. And on top of that, we recognize that while the market at community colleges may be different than UW or the market at community colleges may be different than K through 12, you know, that certainly is a bigger issue, but it is, I think, both at community colleges, UW, and K through 12, you try to figure out what the market rate is and match that. But the raises that we're giving of 2% or proposing at 2% at community colleges do not address specifically what you're asking. Do they get up to UW employees or K through 12, how they match up with K through 12? The retirement is being added for community colleges. Or is being requested always. While I'm on the subject, maybe Chairman be about to address your question on the discrepancy between the 50 and the 58. I have with me Bill Mai, who, despite taking a pay cut to go UW, agreed to come and help. Bill, are you in the audience? Oh. Bill, could you give some further information in terms of that discrepancy, or Brett?
We have a mic, I think. Don't we?
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Bill?
Good to see you. Good to see you guys, too. Been a while. Mr. Chairman, I think that the calculations, I think, actually between the two houses are pretty similar. I think where we have a little bit of difference in how they're showing and probably the analysis that you've seen, I think when Brett built the standard budget, when Brett Jones, head of the budget office, built the standard budget, he built that in with the employer side of House Bill 250, the 1% addition last year. He built that with the employer side in the standard. So really what we're talking about in the analysis, but the difference between the two analyses would be the 0.25% that the governor's budget proposes to cover, and then also the going forward then under the current proposal, now understanding that this thing has changed a couple of times and who knows where it will end up, but say that your current bill for the additional 1.5% goes through as written right now, or at least as I understand it to be written right now. We're talking about an additional employee side, and that's, again, what the governor is wanting to cover here, additional employee side of 0.375 starting in fiscal 2016. And if Don has anything to jump in at any point here, I'm all ears too. But so I think really what we're looking at doing is covering 0.25% for both 15 and 16 for the employee, an additional 0.375% for fiscal year 16. Because, again, we're dealing with just what's covered in this budget. So we all know that those amounts are going to ramp up as we go forward. But to get us through this budget, that's how it's covered. So, again, remember that part of it's covered in the standard budget because of the way House Bill 250 was written last year. And then this piece that the governor is requesting is just those employee pieces that would come due in 15-16. I think that's where our differences are coming up. I reran numbers this morning. I think there's one other component. The second component is I think we're looking at, or the budget office has been looking at, employee compensation a little bit differently in terms of what the net effect might be from a 2.5% increase. And so then the compounding effects that would have on the retirement piece of this thing. I think as I weed through the numbers I've seen this morning from LSO, it appears to me like there's between $400,000 and $600,000 built in addition to what the governor's profile is reflecting for these retirement costs. I'm assuming that most of that is due to the 2.5% raises factored into 15-16, which is a real reasonable way to approach it. At the same time, I would say we're factoring in a certain amount of turnover and replacement of very experienced employees with less experienced employees at lower pay rates, which I think is what Governor was alluding to. We've kind of seen that happening the last couple of years where you're seeing your total amount of 100 series base pay dropping a little bit, and I think a lot of it is related to that kind of bulge of the baby boom going through and we're getting less experienced people in these jobs. But bottom line is I think we're within probably $400,000 to $600,000 depending on how you look at it.
Co-chair. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, so I just want to be sure I understand it. So the total package might be $58 million, but $8 million of it is in the standard budget for the retirement side?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, that's probably not far off. I'm not sure it's a whole $8 million. I think part of – so, I'm working from an undated, untitled document here that I was assured was the numbers you guys were working from yesterday. And assuming that that's the case, I think there's a component of it that is that, and there's also a component of it that is just a difference of assumptions of what goes into that $8 million. In other words, I think, Don, if I may, Mr. Chairman,
no.
Don, I think I'm looking at the sheet that has a retirement FY15 at 1%, retirement FY16 at 1.75%. Those are numbers we're working from. And I think really what we're talking about is something different. That's the total cost, no question about it. That's the total cost of those retirement increases. A big chunk of that's already built into the budget. Another chunk of it is built into whether this is a House bill or Senate file, but the current pending JAC legislation, part of that's built into your fiscal note. The employer side of that would be built into your fiscal note, right? So that wouldn't show up on the governor's profile. That'll show up when you start putting in legislation in that. But what we did put in for recommended compensation was the other 0.375 that would be the employee side of that pending legislation. It's a weird way of doing it, I'll grant you, but I think it's the most consistent way to handle it at this point. So I think there's a component that's missing. There's a pretty big component that's in the standard, and there's a pretty big component that's showing on the governor's profile as separate. All in all, I think we're really close.
Don, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, I would agree with Bill. I included some compounding that he doesn't. That's maybe $500,000 or something like that. I also included the full cost of the House bill or the full cost of the JAC proposal as adopted in October. I didn't understand that they were only they're essentially counting half of it. So that's the difference. So half of the cost of that bill is going to be in their budget, and then half on your fiscal note. And I'd included all of it in one group.
I see.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, I want to be sure is to know what the total package dollar amount is, and then how we do it. That's not the issue so much as how much it really is.
Right, Mr. Chairman, and that's a really good point, Senator. I think it's very close, first of all. Second of all, you're exactly right. This entire budget, I mean, this is the thing that's tough to keep in perspective. But, you know, not only are the revenues forecasts, but the expenditure side of this thing is forecast too. It's, you know, it's a point in time. You build it based on current employment force or employee force and do the best you can from there. But of course, all of these balls are in the air being juggled constantly. So I actually this morning when I looked at this thing, I was actually pleasantly surprised that we were so close coming at it from two completely different approaches. It ended up being pretty close, which is good for a change.
Hey. Thank you, Bill. Hey, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, are you going to speak some more about the employee package, Governor? There's a couple other questions. Would now be a good time?
This is a good time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, the question, and Mr. Co-Chair, you and I talked about it. Maybe you want to ask a question about, you know, the relative fairness to the lower employee people and the amount of money they make relative to the higher. And you wanted it across the board. Do you have any feelings about, you know, capping that so the $50,000 people would receive more money relative to what they earned compared to the $200,000? Have you any thoughts about that? And the other thing too is on merit. And I've kind of turned around a little bit. And I used to, you know, my thinking has been merit pay doesn't really work for state employees. But I'm more and more agreeing with you. And if we decided to have more of a broader package that gave more discretion for merit pay, how would you feel about that?
Well, and taking your last question first in terms of merit pay, if you mean a more broader package, that more money is allocated to that, I don't know that I object to that. But I do think that as you look at the employee evaluations, I think my number's right, 89% of them, of our employees, and I think we have a 99% compliance now, which is remarkable from where we came from. In other words, 99% of the employee evaluations are being done. Of the employee evaluations that are being done, 89% of them are, this isn't the right title, but they're in the middle. So you have a small percentage that are doing extraordinary, and then you have a small percent that are failing. And so to a broader package in terms of adding more money to that, Dean could probably do a better job explaining this, but I think it is important, if you're talking about more money, that the top employees, that small percentage.
Not talking about more money necessarily.
Okay. Well, if in terms of broader, then I'm not sure if I understand what you mean broader.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just if you took your package and instead of doing two and a half, maybe did 1.5 or 1 or some number and gave more discretion for merit.
Well,
same amount of money.
I think I'd be reluctant at this point, without giving us more thought, to take away from the 2.5 to add to the merit pay. Because if you have 89% of your employees in that range, it's the wrong term, I can't remember, the middle range, and you're taking from the percentage that they would get to add to the percentage of the exceptional. I'm not sure that we would cover some of the issues that we have in terms of high turnover.
Okay. And then I think the other question, Governor, that Mr. Co-Chair had was really on the capping piece. Was there any comment on that?
On the capping piece, I think it's, you know, I would have to look at what the numbers are, have Dean look at that for me and do an analysis of that. But I do think that if you say capping, that if you're making whatever it is, that you're making $75,000 and then therefore you're not subject to a raise, you exacerbate the compression issue, number one. And number two, you're telling your presumably long-term employees that their future is where they are
now.
I'd have to look and see how that would work in terms of a cap.
And I think last year we capped that at about $100,000. Was the 120 was the number, and I don't know if the numbers. There's a significant number that are $200,000 at the university, I think. And I don't. We'll have that info. We have it actually. But those are some of the things that we'll have discussions about, and whether a 2.5 and a 2.5 over a couple of years, a $10,000 raise. We'll certainly look at that and have that debate here.
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman, depending upon what the cap is, I'm open to that. So.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Senator Meyer.
Governor, a little bit, and you brought it up, the turnover problem that you say we're having. A lot of it, I think, is demographics, the baby boomer bulge moving through. But if you take away the demographic issue, and I guess I'm assuming that we're losing some 35 and 40 year old people that have a better opportunity maybe in the private sector or someplace else. Do we know what that have we done that analysis? Has Dean done that analysis so we can have a pretty good idea about what that turnover problem is, and whether or not salary increases is the best way to address it. Do we have a good analysis of that at this time?
I think Dean will be able to give you a better answer on that. I think you're right, Senator, that we do have turnover because we have an aging workforce. I mean, that's which I agree that isn't necessarily a salary issue. It's a combination of factors. I would agree with that. In terms of the demographic of 30 to 40 years old, my understanding from Dean is we also are seeing a higher turnover in that age group, which you would not attribute to retirement age. But in terms of those numbers, I couldn't present those to you today, Senator.
Yeah, but
it's a legitimate question. We'll ask Dean to be prepared for.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I think that goes directly to the point that the chairman was making as far as being able to disproportionately apply part of the funds that were available for raises into that area that were your 35 to 40 year olds where we had the turnover problem, and necessarily the folks that were in the higher range that would probably be terming themselves out within the next few years anyway, that might be a way where we could modify the compensation package to address that turnover rate within that population. And I think that's where, when we get all of the analysis, that we might apply something like that. But that would be one of the reasons why we'd have a disproportionate application of the pay package. And essentially, it could be at the higher rates, you'd have a 1%, salary increase, and at the lower rates, you'd have your 2.5% salary increase. But trying to get a real good understanding about what our turnover problem is, how to apply the compensation package to address compression and to address that turnover within those younger demographic areas. And I think that's why we're thinking about a disproportional application of the compensation package. So, I think we'll have some good discussions about that, but I think that's one of the reasons why we may have a disproportionate application.
Well, thank you, Senator. I mean, I want to be clear. I feel strongly about raises for all our employees. As I think you and I discussed my first year, we were discussing about the hay. Do we stick with the hay or abandon the hay? And I thought then that we stick with the hay. And I think what Dean will tell you is that, you know, if you look at the most recent hay analysis, which is dated, that we're falling behind in that in terms of market. And people agree or disagree with the hay, but I think when you visit with Dean, he will bring all of those factors that you're talking about into play, and I think all of those are legitimate, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, just give me, I've got in my notes here, walk out and walk back in, so I know I'm past that. The Unified Network, you know, one of the things that I have felt strongly about is that in a rural state, connectivity is a great equalizer. It helps with telemedicine, telecommuting, teleeducation. And we have seen remarkable gains just in this last year. We've seen over a 700% increase in broadband to our schools. The Unified Network, and Flint Waters can explain this much better than I, but as an analogy to our road systems, with regard to the state and with regard to schools, we're sort of in a situation where if anybody wants to leave the state on a road, you have to go through Cheyenne. And it's the same way with what we have in connectivity right now. If you want to do anything in the schools or on the public side, you have to go through the state. We don't have redundancy. And what the Unified Network does is put up you know, 7 or 8 sites that will add to that redundancy at least 3 times, add to that redundancy. And it also adds to the speed and just the capacity of the system. You know, it wasn't that many years ago where, you know, a desktop computer, you're talking about $3,000 or $4,000. But we've seen the world change very quickly where individual students are bringing their own devices. And as they're bringing their own devices, it creates more demand on the system. We see that when we're doing assessments that overstates it somewhat, but when every student in the states presses the button at the same time, it's hard on the system. The goal for me is to increase the capacity in our school districts, increase the capacity for teaching opportunities for the students through what they can gain through broadband. On top of that, don't think of it as just an individual site any more than you would think about the Atlanta airport being an individual airport. These are hubs that will allow the school districts and the individual schools to increase their capacity. And excitingly, after that is done, it's going to give the private sector a great opportunity to branch off of what we have built and have all the benefits to the private sector that comes with increased capacity. As you see, I've asked for that money and asked for some of it from the SIPA account. I think it is a great opportunity for Wyoming. And if we get the Unified Network, we can move to the next standard, which is called IPv6, which we could potentially be the first state in the country to have that standard. And all that goes with that in terms of the practical applications, but also in the message that we can send from Wyoming that we are a leader, and it's consistent with having one of the world's fastest computer centers, having small software companies and hardware companies from Sheridan to Cody to Cheyenne across the state, moving forward in trying to diversify our economy. Adding to that list, we all know well, minerals, tourism, ag, a fourth category, which is technology. I think I'm very realistic in saying that I think Wyoming can get there. I think we've made great progress in the last couple of years, and I think the Unified Network will be another great next step. I have asked for money for courthouse security for $10 million. There's nothing magical about $10 million. It's a number we thought was a good starting place. As you know, historically and almost for the most part, courthouse security has been left up to the counties. But as we travel around the state, we know that there is needs in our different counties. And when you think about courthouses, of course, we recognize this is the one place, or at least a place, where people, the public, don't have much say whether they go or not. If you're called for jury duty, you've got to go. And the security that we should provide across the courthouses in the state is important for the citizens to go there, certainly important to me, and I know important to the legislature as well. So the plan is we will start with $10 million, which may or may not be the right amount, but then we look statewide. We have a courthouse security team that's been working on standards, and I think we need to start the process of making sure every courthouse in the state has at least minimal standards in terms of security, and we provide the security to the citizens we require to go there. Along the same lines, I've asked for $9 million for school security. I remember, as many of you do, in high school in particular, we used to bring our rifles to school, and we had a shooting range down in the basement. We'd leave our guns in the locker, unlocked lockers. Times have changed, and as a result of that, we, I think, need to be aware that our kids, our most precious resource and what we value most in Wyoming, that they have the protections along with the teachers and the administration. I traveled, as I traveled different schools, for example, Wheatland, Wyoming, I had a very good tour of the school there. You have spread out buildings. You have some limited space. If you go to Rock Springs, if you go to any school in the state, they have different levels of security to take care of the kids. And whenever you talk about security in school, I know people have different views on what it should be, but I think we need to start the process looking across the schools of Wyoming as we spend billions building new schools, of saying as part of these remodels or builds, we need some minimum standards in terms of what schools look like and how safe they are.
Governor, Mr. Chairman, a quick question on not specifically the programs, but the funding mechanism. And I know on the courts there's that $10 million, and there's others where you're going into the 13-14 budget and utilizing, I think, about $38 million to fund some of these things you think need to be funded very quickly. Could you talk a little bit about that and why you felt we needed to do that? Instead of having the money go to the LSRA, it's going to be utilized and spent as soon as the session's over, if it proceeds like it is now?
Well, it's part of it is just trying to address a need quickly, but in terms of what we've done in the past, in terms of waiting, you know, if you wanted to substitute money now for money later, I mean, that's an option. But let me have Brett address in terms of how that money would flow.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman,
something vibes with the mics, Brett. None of them ever worked with you.
We're going to have to include that in your technology.
Technology. You get a special mic with Brett's name on it.
We've add another $100 to that list, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Chairman Bebout, here's the list of effective immediates, the energy policy, the public defender for capital case funding, the state engineer's office, workforce services, oil and gas. We've asked for $3 million. Now, that's other fund. It's not general fund, to address idle and orphan wells. Bark beetle, $5 million. University of Wyoming, a total of $11 million, which is the AA and what's this,
the water system.
The water system, thank you. And the Business Council, the exception request they had was $30 million for business-ready communities. I recommended a third of that at $10 million, and then courthouse funding at $10 million. So let me have Brett follow up with that.
Go ahead, Brett.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, could you restate your question, if you could, please, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there's $38 million of funding that you're going to utilize. The LSRA should have had around $62 million would have gone to it, and you've taken $38 million of that and not have it go to the LSRA to fund these priorities that the governor just discussed. And my question is, you know, obviously there's other ways to do it. Why did you decide to do it this way and the impacts of it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, specifically, I think in terms of the selected list that the governor just reviewed, I think the issue is a sense of urgency with respect to a number of these issues, quite frankly. The courthouse funding, I know there's a sense of what the scope of that problem is. I know there's information that's been developed by the courts in that regard, and I believe, not to speak for the governor, but I think there is a sense of urgency to get to moving on some of those specific issues that have been previously identified.
I'm sorry, let me just interrupt. I want to make sure I may have misunderstood your question, Senator, in terms if it's a policy question or a mechanism question, in terms of, because we have...
It's not a policy.
Right.
What it does, it sets up so that there's $38 million that since it's spent out of the 13-14 budget, you don't see in the 15-16 budget.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that's correct. Essentially, the identified effective immediates do come out of the $62 million that was projected to flow to the LSRA at the end of the current biennium.
And that's in the decisions I made on that is, you know, when I took office, we had about $900 million in LSRA, and now we have about $1.7 billion. And so the question is, do you have that money flow in? And then to me, it seemed like it was all right to head it off before it gets there to address what I viewed as immediate needs.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Governor. Back on the school security money, you talk about the use of it for design primarily on the capital construction end, is my understanding. But are there any pieces of that that are programs, you know, whether they be training, whether they be hiring folks that we would anticipate moving on in future bienniums?
Yeah, Representative Stubbs, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubbs, and I didn't... I am open. The reason I mentioned up the on the capital construction side, it just seems, I guess, relative to the billions we're spending building new schools, that we ought to have this in the back of our mind. I mean, it's a fraction of that money, and we could build safer schools, in my mind. But I certainly would not want to limit it to that. You know, school resource officers, I think, are very valuable. Having a deputy sheriff in a school is very valuable. It comes at a high cost in terms of dollars when you say you're going to put a school resource officer in every school. But I think we should be open to the idea of how do we add an element to that to schools, whether they can share a person or not. The other issue that we've been looking at is, you know, with regard to WildLink, which, as you know, we are fully ingrained in the WildLink system with Motorola. Motorola now has a product, as an example of beyond just the construction, has a product that allows every teacher to wear a button, and when they hit it, it automatically provides identification of the room they're in, where they are, gets that message to law enforcement right away rather than having to make several calls. Of course, there's expense associated with that type of product. But to try to answer your question, I don't think we should limit it to just the walls are better or the windows are better. I think we ought to look at it in all ways, including training for staff, additional law enforcement, if that's acceptable, or equipment such as the Motorola product. Mr. Chairman, the other area that I've asked that I've addressed in my budget is with regard to the Department of Health, starting with DD waivers. Last budget session, I asked, starting with this committee, additional $12 million to address the waiting list. The legislature declined to do that. Again, I asked for additional money to address the waiting list. We have, last week, as a matter of fact, I met with an individual who provides services to the DD population, and he was telling me about some individuals that have been on the waiting list for 6 or even beyond 7 years. As we have the redesign process going on now, we believe, the Department of Health believes, that ultimately that will save money in terms of providing the needed benefits, but not unnecessary benefits to the population, and that the savings there will allow us to put more people on the waiver rather than have them wait. two things about that. One is it's hard to gauge what that number will be. And secondly, even if we knew that number, it's not going to be an immediate savings to be able to address the waiting list. As a result, as I did a couple of years ago, I again asked for some additional money for DD waiver to address the waiting list, and I asked the Department of Health to break it down in terms of different time periods. What I have asked for is an 18-month waiting list. That'll come at a cost of roughly $20 million, $10 million on the Fed side, $10 million on the state side. If you went to 6 months, it would cost about $28 million. If you limited it to 12 months, it would be $24 million. If you said 2 years, it would come at a cost of about $16 million. In other words, depending upon what you make that waiting list to be, it increases the dollar amount or decreases the dollar amount. At 18 months, we would address 172 people who are on adult DD waiver, 115 children who are on the waiting list, and 51 who are on the acquired brain injury waiver. So a significant population of the waiting list could be addressed that have been on the waiting list for over 18 months with that request that I've made in the legislature. Also, of course, with the Department of Health is the issue of the ACA. We see, as I look at the big increases in spending that we've been looking at the last couple of years. Reoccurring spending in this budget is $44.9 million for the Department of Health. Of that, about $28 million of it is to cover the mandatory side of the ACA, Obamacare. And so the question that before the Department of Health, the legislature, the state over the last year plus, has been, do we do the full expansion, the full Obamacare? I have asked the Department of Health to do an analysis of that, and I would compliment the Department of Health and Director Forslund for the work that they have done. They've identified, in my mind, what I think, if we were to do the full expansion, the best option, which is they call the Wyoming Fit or Medicaid Fit, which basically is an expansion of the Medicaid program that we have now. The advantage to it is the system's already there. The advantage to it is we could get started more quickly than developing one of the other four options presented by the Department of Health. So if we were to do it, I'm convinced that which is option number three, the Medicaid fit option, is the best way to go. I have, in my budget, I've declined to recommend that to the legislature. And that is not without a difficult thought process, because the fact is we do have 16,000 people, roughly, who fall in the gap, and that if we were to do the expansion and if it worked as proposed, it would address the needs of many of those 16,000. The problem I have is that, as you recall, one of the first things I had my attorney general do is sue on the ACA. I thought it was bad policy, and I thought it was against the Constitution. The Supreme Court, for the most part, said it was constitutional. I still have questions about the policy, but I recognize it's the law of the land. But even recognizing that, as we see the exchange, which is separate but a part of the same vehicle as the whole package, we have put this country's put a lot more people taken away insurance than have signed up for insurance. And so I think improvements need to be made to the ACA. I think certainly we need to see better performance before we commit as a state, which would largely be federally funded, but still some state funds, before we commit as a state to go down that alley. The difficult situation for me is we have a need that's unmet, but the only solution that's out there in a big way is the ACA, which I don't believe is the solution. So I have not recommended to the legislature to do the full expansion at this time. We'll look forward to the legislative discussion on that and see where you all come out. I have also, as I said, I tried to address in my budget the needs of the citizens and also invest in those areas where I think we find a high return. So I've asked for additional money for tourism, for expansion of markets that where we currently are already working, and expansion in international markets. I've asked for money for air service enhancements, which I think are largely successful, not always. We've had some failures, but I think our service enhancements add to tourism and they add to our business opportunities in this state. One of the issues that I often hear as I meet with companies that do a lot of work in Wyoming, when I press them on why they don't perhaps consider moving a headquarters to Wyoming, is the issue of air service. I recognize we cannot buy our way out of a small population, and when it comes to air service, sheer numbers ultimately carry the day. But I think we can find a sweet spot with additional air service enhancements. With regard to community colleges,
Mr. Chairman, and I apologize, Governor, before you got off the ACA issue, and I know that's just something that we will probably philosophically disagree on forever. But my understanding still is, though, that, and I think that you said that our Department of Health is still showing cost savings to the state by going to the ACA. And I guess it just depends upon, and I certainly understand that the performance of the ACA could be better. I was a little disappointed with some aspects of it myself in the rollout. They're certainly cleaning that up. And then the issues what we have with the state of Wyoming and the cost of health care certainly is and not having a competitive market. But I guess just given that, I just and I'm not sure if there's, my question still it remains, though, that, given that we could have a cost fit or a cost savings to the state of Wyoming, then you're still not, you're still just concerned over the ACA not performing? Because I guess some of the things that, it's like comparing, you can't always, the exchanges and some of that is separate from the Medicaid, and I'm not sure that's a fair comparison.
Well, thank you, Senator. And I think our disagreement isn't based upon recognizing the need. I think we agree on that. I think the disagreement is what's the solution. And to, I guess, maybe talk a little more about it. There is a performance issue, but there's also, in my mind, as we see the rollout of the entire ACA, not just the exchange, this process where we say we're going to have this portion of the ACA delayed for a year or this portion delayed for a year without legislation, without, from my view, a good opportunity for debate on that issue. So if we sign up 16,000 people, if that is the right number, what level of comfort do we have that the federal government will follow through with the program as it's supposed to work? Because the whole system is designed in part because we're going to get a lot of young, healthy people into the system, and that's going to be able to cover the portion of the cost of the system. I don't see that working right now. I don't see a lot of young people signing up. And so when you say that is sort of the premise on how it's going to be largely funded and it's not working, it causes me additional concerns about the federal government's commitment, their ability to live up with the commitment. And maybe that'll improve. We understand they're working on the website. We understand that the numbers perhaps are going up. But as I sit here today to say I want the state of Wyoming to sign up on this program where it will cost a lot of federal dollars and it will cost state dollars. And you're right, if we sign up and it works, there would be a large savings to the state. But to sign up on that when I think there is doubt about which portions of it will actually be implemented on a time frame they originally started out on, which portion of it is going to provide more insurance versus kicking people off insurance, which portion of it is going to cause people who like the doctor they have to no longer have that doctor. These are the concerns that I think, before we sign on to what is a massive change in the way we address health care, that we legitimately are right to ask those questions and see if those improvements can be made. So it is not a disagreement, Senator, in terms of addressing the need. It's a disagreement in terms of what the appropriate solution is. And as I see the ACA and the performance or the lack of the performance on the ACA now, I'm not convinced that it's the appropriate solution for the state.
Mr. Chairman, Governor, and you know, and I guess you know, with the state of Wyoming, we certainly accept hundreds of million dollars in federal money, and I'm don't really, I guess, haven't seen where you know, there's been real issues about you know, the federal government keeping their commitment on that, and certainly we could draft it in a manner of. You know, that if the funding levels were to drop from the federal government, you know, as we discussed last year, that we would you know, certainly alter that. And I guess I'll still just maintain that I guess having some insurance for a period of time for some of these people would be better than having none at all at any point. So,
well,
but it's a long discussion.
It is, Senator, and I appreciate your perspective on that. You know, with regard to federal commitments, I look at the AML dollars. With regard to federal commitments, I look at a place that has shut down our government that said to the long-term anniversary folks who planned 2 years to have their last trip together getting turned away at Yellowstone National Park. So, and, you know, I have, I think, legitimate reasons to wonder where the federal government's going to go. You know, the AML fund, sequestration, those are recent history. And they came without you all or me voting on here's what we ought to do. So I think, you know, I think it's legitimate that there's valid disagreements. My disagreement isn't because it's federal dollars. My disagreement is I'm not sure this system is going to work. And as I look at the ACA, it goes more in my mind to how you pay versus quality of the health care and availability of the health care. Sort of an overriding concern about it. Is it really lowering costs? Is it providing more quality health care? Or is it just a way how we pay for a system that continues to increase in expenditure? So you're right, we could discuss this for some time, but I do appreciate your perspective.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Governor. And I just returned from D.C. from the National Conference of State Legislators, and I serve on the Health and Welfare Committee. And having that opportunity to visit with a lot of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle and states that have expanded Medicaid and states that haven't, what we heard from our fellow colleagues is some of the successes states are having with that, and what I would hope that you, as the governor of the state of Wyoming, and your conversations with your fellow governors, at least to keep that open mind and moving forward. One of the things that we did here was there's a number of our veterans that are returning back from missions, and that would be covered under this expansion group. And that 133 to 138% of that federal poverty level, to get to that level, you really have to be working somewhere. So I guess we kind of refer to that group as the working poor. And if we can't cover them in the Medicaid FIT legislation, it's just our hope that we are looking to see what other states are doing. Some of them are much larger than the state of Wyoming and accepting larger amounts of federal money. And as you know, as time goes on, we get a smaller proportion of that federal money.
Well, Representative, I will certainly keep an open mind. And my decision, as I said, recognizing the needs out there, which I think we agree there is needs. It, in my mind, it was not political; it was pragmatic. Is this system going to work? Is this system the solution for Wyoming? We see, for example, in Wisconsin, the Governor Walker there is looking at sort of a hybrid. We see in Arkansas they're working on a hybrid. You know, when I said I didn't want to go forward with a state-based exchange, we certainly heard letters about, hey, sign on. And part of my reasoning for not wanting to do a state-based exchange was part of my reasoning now. I think there is some guinea pigs out there. And I don't mean that to be overly negative, but I think just in terms of the states and the states that did state exchanges, I mean, it's a huge, huge lift. And there's a lot to sort out before I think we say this is a smoothly running system and we want to sign up. But I remain, when I announced my budget, I was coming back from Bahrain and I was in the airport in Dubai. By the way, when we were in Dubai, representative in the airport, we were trying to figure out where to do a press conference, and there was no quiet place. So they have rooms that you can rent that are sleeping pods, and I had to go into the sleeping pod on the bed with Tony Young, and I was wondering how that all came out in a press conference with us renting a room by the hour. But it turned out just fine. But what I said in there is, because the question was asked, you know, will you keep an open mind on this? And, you know, if changes are made that I think are provide me a level of confidence that the system's improved and that it's sustainable, I will continue to look at it.
Mr. Chairman, last follow-up, and I'll let it go, is the one thing that still I'm uncertain of is you know, if we're not going to expand the Medicaid for the 16 or so identified thousand, I believe, is roughly the number, then what is the solution for right now? What will we do? What's the solution?
Well, it's a great question, and I don't know that I could say today here's the solution, but I would point out, you know, with disagreement by many in the legislature, I thought that the Healthy Frontiers, which I recommended funding for, was one way to look at it. Because I think, in fairness, as you look at states, we're in a bit of an awkward position saying we don't like this, but we haven't moved forward with our own solutions. And that's collectively the states. And part of it is because of the federal nature, the federal part of it. You know, it's hard to craft these solutions. But I do think that, as I said, when you say... the state doesn't have its own solution, and so this is the solution. It's a bit like, you know, somebody dying of thirst, and there's one drop of water, and we add another drop of water in the bucket. It doesn't solve the problem. It maybe tries to address it, but the 16,000 out there, I think you're right that is a need, and it's a need that we have to. Not forget as we go through this decision process on the ACA.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman?
Yeah. Please proceed.
As I left the Department of Health, I talked about tourism, our second largest industry, and air service enhancements. I'll now shift gears to community colleges. We had... a healthy request from community colleges in terms of capital construction. I recommended LCCC Eastern Wyoming, which is about $22 million. The process that they go through on the community colleges is they evaluate them, I think, on 13 different points, and they came up with a priority list. The question on community colleges is, as we see the work they do across the state, I think our community colleges are excellent. They do some tremendous work. And, you know, we want to make sure they remain strong. The question is there a better way to look at capital construction for community colleges rather than my individual decision, the legislature's decision on which capital construction projects go forward? Most of them, in my mind, have merit. We have the project in Gillette, which is heavily, will propose to be heavily financed by the locals there. We have projects at all the community colleges, or nearly all the community colleges, that look like good projects. I did not recommend them all. I tried to recommend the most, the ones I recommended were at the top of the priority list.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Coulter.
And Governor, on that, and just a little bit, you know, there's it's all over the place on how we fund capital construction projects for community colleges, and a lot of it's based on the ability of those particular districts to be able to fund part of it. And I know in Fremont County we did about 65-35. I think we did one up in Sheridan County, 50-50. And in Eastern, you know, they don't have a very large tax base. But when they brought the proposal, did they, in fact, tax the same percentage, not necessarily dollar amount, but at least the same percentage as how the other community colleges have to do to get the state funds?
You know, I looked at that actually this morning, and the answer, as I understand it, is yes. It's not the, as you point out, it's not the same dollar amount, but in terms of the same burden, it would be the same burden, which I think is same amount of mills, 6 mills, is correct, Senator.
There. So, and we'll have those discussions, I guess, Senator Myers, area of the state there. So,
Mr. Chairman.
I want to make sure Senator Myers paying his fair share. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
And Governor, following up a little bit on the same lines, I know, you know, one of my concerns is that in that 13-factor test that they use to prioritize, there is nothing that looks at the ability to leverage local dollars. And just wondering if you could...
You're talking about on the private side, on local dollars.
Mr. Chairman and Governor, I'm really talking about not only private side, but local tax base, whether they do, you know, some sort of bond on the local level, whatever it may be. And I know that this recommendation fits with their priorities, but it also, on two projects, takes up essentially all the CapCon monies for the colleges. And just wondering if, in your review of the potential list, if that was a consideration that you looked at as you were deciding which ones to fund and which ones not to fund?
Certainly that was part of the consideration as I looked at the list. I also looked at my belief in, for example, the career technical school at Eastern Wyoming. I thought was fit with economic development and meeting the needs of industry out there. In terms of the total dollar amount, you know, we haven't set a total dollar amount available for capital construction. I mean, it's, as I said, my recommendations left, I think, very legitimate good projects on the table. It's a question of how much money we want to spend, Representative. And we have batted around the idea that from my office's perspective, it would almost be nice to have sort of a system the consensus block grant for counties. In other words, could we agree upon X amount of dollars that should go for capital construction for community colleges every year or every 2 years and have them prioritize the list, taking into account what you're suggesting, and also have them have that internal discussion that provides great recommendations to my office and to the legislature if we agree on an amount. And because what you see is just what we see this year is you have Eastern Wyoming. It's a huge dollar amount that takes away from the rest of the opportunity potentially for the other colleges. And, you know, that's my belief that that's the right recommendation, but that is certainly not science. It's not math. It's based upon my overall view. So that is something I would suggest is maybe worth us looking at is, if we say $50 million a year to community colleges or some amount, is have them make a strong recommendation that's, say, consistent with the consensus block grant for our counties. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Governor, if I can just ask since we're kind of starting on capital construction, just a general kind of policy or philosophy that you might have. I came across... one of the things that obviously enters into the capital construction, particularly with university and colleges, is this: we have a substantial matching requirement. And recently, I learned that one of the matching requirements that was accepted and used in a particular situation was actually the gift of a future interest, which was that there was a gift that was basically a kind of a legacy gift that would be given at some point in the future, and then there was a present value attributed to the value of what that would be when the gift was actually made. And then that ended up qualifying as a matching gift for a construction. And I'm just, to me, that I found that I had never thought about that, and I'm trying to figure out what I think about that. And I'm interested if you have, and I know I'm catching you off the cuff here. If you want to think about it, I understand. But I'm just wondering if you have a thought or an opinion on that particular use of matching funds.
I would like to hear what you think about it after you figure it out, Senator. I guess I would like to look at that and think about that. I think as I sit here today, I may have mixed reactions to that.
If I may, Governor, I think that was that's kind of the same thing I was at. I thought, you know, it seems a little bit of the object was to have matching funds, but now we have matching funds that won't exist for a number of years, for a certain number of years into the future, and now they've matched, and so the state puts up its money in cash now for that, and ultimately with the idea that that'll come sometime in the future. It's great to have public involvement and that private sector partnership, but it seems a little bit of a stretch, and my alarm is I think the same alarm that probably you're feeling is when the state puts up its money now in that matching, it seems to me that you're kind of requiring, or the thought is that money will be available to construct the facility or whatever purpose the match goes in for now as opposed to at some point in the future. But I'm still trying to figure out what I think about that.
Yeah, I'll give that some thought. I do think that, you know, at the university and as you suggest perhaps otherwise, there is a commitment by a private person, and they'll say over the next 5 years I'll give X dollar amounts without having that cash in hand at the beginning. I guess the concern maybe you share and I share is how do we know that'll come about, and should the state be the first one to do the match, or should they come in simultaneously? Those are the questions I would continue to have. So. Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
The a couple more things. We're very interested in listening to constituents and the legislature on the game and fish budget. You know, the game and fish, obviously, they do work for sportsmen, but it's broader than that. The work that they do helps the state in tourism. It helps the state with regard to industry. There is a sweet spot between commission funds and general funds. And we, you know, I think that that's a legitimate discussion for us to continue to have. In my belief, and I've asked for in my budget additional general funds rather than commission funds. I understand that there's work in the legislature now on that, but it is important for us to make sure we adequately fund game and fish, not just for sportsmen, but for tourism industry, and recognize that while governors come and go, you know, the habitat and the wildlife of Wyoming will remain very important in perpetuity. I'm going to ask, which I did not put in my budget, and I'll have, I think that there perhaps was a mistake last session in terms of cuts received by that nursing homes had to take on. They say it was about a $290,000 mistake. I'm going to ask, that's not in my budget now, but I wanted to let this group know, for another $300,000 for nursing homes to address what I think was a mistake, and also address the fact that our nursing homes, as we are one of the most fastest aging populations in the country, have adequate funding. So that request will be for about $300,000. And sort of a summary, as I said, I think we've done a pretty good job keeping our budget relatively flat. Our standard budget this session is $2.664 billion. It's a little tricky, though, because if you add ETS in there, it's about $2.7 billion. I don't know if we have an agreement whether we add think of ETS as standard budget or not, because they are involved in zero-based budgeting, but it is an ongoing expense. It's going to be there, and so if I think it's probably appropriate to think about it in terms, it's standard budget, but it's something we need to review every 2 years. If you compare the standard budget, if you include that, the $2.7 billion in the standard versus the $2.6 billion, to the 2013-14, the 2013-14 standard was $2.76 billion. In other words, we have a lower standard budget than we did 2 years ago. As I said, we've cut our number of employees from the 2010. All this at a time when there is additional needs at the Department of Health. Our proposed total fund spending is $3.3 billion. In 2013-14, it was 3.31. This year, it's 3.3 billion. So a slight increase, but relative to the health costs employee compensation, we think it is relatively flat. Of that, one-time spending is $462 million. Reoccurring, $119 million. That's 44.9% for health. $50 million, these are rough numbers, obviously. $50 million for employee compensation. $8 million for UW engineering program, which I fully support. Major general fund spending increases over the last biennium. This is not all of them. This is the major one. Local government from $135 million to $175 million. Courthouse security, zero to $10 million. Mandatory Medicaid, $28 million. Bark beetle mitigation, $5 million. We've increased major maintenance from $53 million to $68 million, so a $15 million increase on major maintenance. And business-ready communities is a $10 million increase as well. So those are sort of the big ticket items that show increase over the last biennium that drives us from $3.31 billion to $3.33 billion. Chairman Bebout, Chairman Harshman, I'd be happy to answer questions on anything that I covered or not covered at this time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Governor. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Back on community colleges, if I'm using the right term, it's the enrollment level. Funding level, I believe that that's been stagnant for numerous years. And has your budget addressed, or has there any been discussion around that? And then the second one, Mr. Chairman, will be on community colleges also, and that's the level of raises. It seems like my understanding, or what I can see, is kind of things are all over the map, and I understand that there's a reason for that as far as basically a chart or something that would show that some of the community colleges has given raises over the past years, and I just wonder if that's a document that could be provided to the committee.
Thank you, Senator, for the question. And I have, or I had in front of me, the numbers that showed the raises for community colleges, and Senator, this is, and one of the issues on enrollment growth is, as I understand it, our baseline. We picked a baseline year, and so if you look from that baseline year, there was a big increase in enrollment growth, and then it steadied out. So it's one of the questions we may have is, where's our baseline in terms of enrollment growth? In terms of salaries, since 2010, Northern Wyoming Community College, a change in salaries is 2.6. Laramie Community College, 5% increase. Central Wyoming, 9.4% increase. Northwest, 4.4. Casper, 2.8. Western Wyoming, 4. Eastern Wyoming, 9.9. So that's from 2010. So it varies, you're right, it's all over the map in terms of the percent increases. But the point I was trying to make and what we try to do in being fair and recommending salary increases for public employees, the 2.5, 2.5 versus the 2, is to take into account the community colleges over a period when the state as a whole has not seen raises, have given some raises.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, a little bit on that community college and enrollment formula. It seems like we have to go back to the original base every time, and every time we go into the biennium, we have to have an exception request. And that particular part of their budget seems to work different than any other budget where the the exception request doesn't get into the standard budget, and so you have to go back to the base, and it seems like it's a complicated way of doing that. And I was wondering, you know, if you could comment it or have Brett comment on that to see whether or not there's a way to do that so we're not looking at these exception requests when the students are already there, and how we might be able to figure out a way to work that a little smoother.
You know, Senator, I agree with you. There's room for improvement there. Let me have Mary Kay or Brett explain it. Part of the reason is we don't get the numbers in a timely fashion. Not that they're late. It's just the timing of it is so we get them after we make our preparations. So. And just so we're clear, I guess added to the Senator's question, is the baseline 2005?
Mr. Chairman, the baseline is 0405 for the enrollment growth calculation. And under the current methodology, the Commission is charged with recalculating that on a biennial basis. So when the exception request lands in front of the governor and ultimately in front of the Joint Appropriations Committee, it is always considered one-time funding. In this particular case, the community colleges requested a change in the, when you talk to them, you'll note they requested a change in the methodology along with the calculation. They were proposing an adjustment of the base year from 0405 to 910, which resulted in a little over a $14 million enrollment growth request from the community colleges. But they were also requesting that that become part of the standard in the future, going into the future. So they did propose a change in methodology in that regard.
Okay. Governor Breck, could you comment, comment on their proposed methodology as to whether or not that would function smoother in the future, or whether we're just changing 05 to 09, 010, or, you know, I'm just wondering if this is the best way to skin the cat, or is this another way to just move the problem forward?
Well, Senator, I think what they proposed would simplify it in terms of this is what it is and this is their standard budget. But, you know, in fairness to the colleges, that only works for so long as they don't see explosive employment increases, and then that'll change, and so would be revisited at that point. As part of the compensation package, we didn't take into account the enrollment increases. We did make the recommendation of the 2%, though, which probably will not be, certainly not the same dollar amount as they're recommending in terms of changing the baseline years.
If I recall, and I might have these numbers wrong, because sometimes I remember my budget numbers, you know, get different numbers in different slots, but didn't we have in the last biennium somewhere around $8-9 million that increased from the 2005? So are we essentially, if we're not giving them the $14 million and we're based off their 2004-05, we're giving them a reduction in their standard budget?
I think your numbers ring sound familiar to me. Brad, do you know what those numbers were?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, specifically their calculation going into 13-14, I believe, produced a number in excess of $22 million, and ultimately the appropriation that they received was $7.5 million related to enrollment growth.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's almost a flat budget as far as enrollment growth, and if we stayed with the formula, it would be almost three times that then.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, specifically they did two different calculations in preparing their proposal for the governor's review. Without an adjustment in the base years of 04-05, it was in excess of $19 million. They did acknowledge the beginnings of a reduction in overall enrollment, which resulted in a smaller ultimate calculation resulting from their methodology. One of the other things that was noted in conversation was also local revenues and trend lines associated with property tax revenues, as well as with tuition and fee revenue. Tuition revenue, as you well know, is Tuition increases are set by the commission, but fee increases are set at the individual colleges.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Astor, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Brett, so just to make sure I'm clear, that this budget reflects still the 05 enrollment growth, did not take into consideration or move up to the 910?
Go ahead, Brett.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, specifically the budget proposal reflects the governor's recommendation with respect to enrollment growth. The request that they ultimately submitted for consideration was the adjustment to the 910 biennium as their base years.
Well, I'm sorry, but I guess I didn't understand the answer. Where is the budget at the recommendation? Is it still at the 05?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, the methodology itself has not changed. Their proposal was to change it. The governor's recommendation does not reflect acceptance of their proposal to change the base year necessarily, but he may want to expand his thoughts on that.
I think,
No, they have not had an increase in their standard budget since 05.
Right.
State. Certainly tuition and fees and those things have changed.
Correct.
The allow raises and local mills have changed on other projects and all those kind of things. But okay, I think Representative, you ready? Okay.
I am, Mr. Chairman. I'm still not quite understanding. Is there an amount in this budget for enrollment growth at community colleges?
No.
So, Mr. Chairman, as a reminder, what happened the last biennium was, I think it was $17 million, something of that, 14, $17 million that was requested. The committee took it completely out, and in the round robin, we were able to put, I guess it was probably $15 million because we were able to put back in $7.5 million, which was half of what the colleges needed to handle their enrollment growth at that point. Where this becomes a huge problem is for colleges like Gillette College, where they have huge enrollment growth, and the funding is always after the fact. So I think this is one of the places where we're really going to have to consider and ask. And Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to hear from the governor. You mentioned in your narrative that the formula needs to be reevaluated. I think I probably tend to agree with you, but how do you envision, you know, what's the timeline for that? Do we have time to deal with that and still take care of these colleges and make sure that they have the resources they need to provide what they do for the state in this budget?
Well, first of all, on the question of time, I'm not sure that we do, but I think it's immediate needs, or immediate priority is making sure we meet their funding needs now, and then try to find the formula that works. But I think if you look at enrollment growth, because it does depend upon the baseline, enrollment growth has gone down. And so when we didn't recommend money for that, we did recommend money for raises. But the problem is, it seems to me, for the community colleges, is that depending upon the baseline, you can go up and down in any given year or any given two-year period. But we all know that the community colleges are going to continue to be an important part of our state, and we want to make sure that we adequately fund them. So if you look just at enrollment growth, because of the baseline we chose, we would say you need less funding. And I didn't think that was where we wanted to go. So a new model, I'm certainly open to that. I'm not sure that the timing could be done between now and the end of the session, but I'm certainly open to that. And then when you get into enrollment growth, you know, depending upon which college you talk to, you know, they view it, I think, a little bit differently in terms of bodies in seats versus bodies online. And that draws another question in terms of how we should be looking at the formula. I mean, the fact is, from 2005, things have changed in terms of the number of people taking courses online, which is a legitimate way to learn. But the needs of an online student in terms of impact on campus are different than that student who's there every day
you know, walking down the same carpet.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mays.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, on the university's capital construction, have you or are we going to address the issue of the failure of the BSL-3 lab in Laramie? Have they visited with you about that at all? Or
I'm not sure I know what failure you're talking about.
Apparently the walls are cracking. They had a power outage, and the walls have cracked, and it's not functioning as it was designed to, and my understanding is it may take in the neighborhood of $500,000 to repair that. Have they visited with you at all about that? Or
we visited about the labs over there, and I made a recommendation to fund. Let me make sure I get the dollar amount right. I think it was half of what they. What was the dollar amount? I can't remember the dollar amount. I'm sorry. Let me make sure we get the right number. Their request was $600,000 and. The request was 1.2, Representative, and I recommended 600,000.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
I believe that just covers operation and maintenance, if I remember correctly from their presentation. I'm not sure that addresses the failure of that lab. I may be wrong, but I think I'm correct there. Am I correct or am I wrong?
I don't know if you've heard the whisperings here, Representative, but the request was operation request.
That's what I thought.
For certification.
Right. So we have not addressed the repair of that.
The repair was not part of the request.
I see Bill Mai there. I think might have some more information.
We'll ask our university.
That'd be good.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I think the university is going to come prepared to talk about BSL-3. On Thursday, and I think these guys are right. That 1.3 that was requested, that was for operations. You're right too. It's for operations and for people to run the thing, basically. Governor's rec was for half of that, so it's funded for 1 year to operate it. But you're right. There was an issue with. I don't know if everybody heard about this thing or not. It was news to me. But what happened, so they brought the lab up to snuff, you know, with your appropriations. Apparently some kind of a switch that turns on all that air handling equipment was put into the wrong mode by a partial brownout that occurred in West Laramie. And it reversed the system, I guess, and created negative pressure in there, caused all kinds of damage inside. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure, Representative, where that is as far as
what the request is to fix that lab. But it certainly will be fixed. They're working on it now, and there are some contingency funds. I'm actually still trying to get my hands around how they fund everything over there right now. It's no small task, let me tell you. But I do know there are some contingency funds available off of various projects to address these kinds of things. I think that one was a real shocker, though.
Well, one more follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative.
So am I hearing you that they will be able to handle repair internally? Or?
I don't know. Mr. Chairman, I don't know that answer, but we'll have it for you on Thursday. And Representative Moniz, I will tell you, we're bringing some capital facilities guys with us that can address some of these real specific issues. In fact, I'll throw another one at you that happened this weekend. If you've been
wait a minute.
What are you reading the papers or...
I don't think we've got you on the schedule, do we?
No. Reading the websites.
Go ahead.
But, you know, it's been kind of cold over in Laramie. You may not have noticed. And apparently there were a bunch of, again, you just have to love all these valves. I've never had to worry about some of this capital construction stuff. But apparently the university over the last year or two has been doing a bunch of work on their fire suppression systems. They put in these state-of-the-art valves, and apparently because of some frozen pipes, state-of-the-art valves resulted in a flooded health sciences building Saturday morning that I started getting phone calls about pretty early on.
Senator Bebop?
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, just to, for community colleges to be sure that, that at least I'm understanding it, the $15 million request was for enrollment growth for 13-14. That was denied. The legislature gave $7.5 million. That $7.5 million is not in there in this budget, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, I understand. Governor, I had another question just to get more of your philosophy, and certainly you've worked hard to come with a very reasonable budget to the committee, and you've outlined your needs very well to us, and we sure appreciate that. As we look forward to the 17, 18, and even further out, given the nature of what's going on with our state, we've talked a lot about all of us have the federal overreach, the war on coal, the lack and inability to get permits to develop our resources. What's your perspective as you look at the government budget that you presented now as we look forward, you know, 2, 4, 6 years out? Do you have any concerns? And if you do, how do you feel we should be addressing those?
Well, I guess what I'd say is, you know, the state's in good shape. I mean, this budget is well within our revenue. We've left you a lot of money on the table. But as you know, because so much of our state is funded by minerals, you have to look at what's going to happen in the future. And I think as we've left money on the table, I think it's appropriate for all of us to consider how much of that we should be putting in various savings. Because as I look at, particularly with regard to coal, you know, I have grave concerns about what's going to happen with coal. As you've heard me talk, you know, globally, it's the fastest growing fuel source. And yet in this country, we see it getting suppressed. And so to answer your question, I do have concerns going out. You know, the price of oil, the Craig in October really bumped up where they thought oil was going to be, and it turns out right now, short term, that it's better than they anticipated. I think oil and coal long term are going to be fine. Oil and gas long term are going to be fine. Coal is a big concern, though, because it means so much in terms of sort of a base budget for us, as you and I and Chairman Harshman have discussed. So I think we have to, like I said, this budget doesn't represent everything I want. It represents what I think reasonably meets the needs of the state. But I think we have to be cautious going forward. We're in good shape. But as we look at revenue prices or revenue as related to mineral prices going forward, I think we need to continue during this time period to be cautious as we have the last several years. I think some of the things we need to explore with regard to coal in particular, certainly we're looking at the ports. I've been working on that. The individual members of the legislature have been working on that. And I think we have to prepare ourselves to be as aggressive as possible to make sure that we not only represent what coal means to Wyoming, but to the country and frankly, the world. And so we are going to be undoubtedly being proactive on that, but we also think we have to prepare in terms of litigation. I think that's where it's going to come as we see just what happened on regional haze. You know, that's a perfect example of, in my view, federal overreach at a huge cost to the state, at a huge cost to the coal industry. So I guess to summarize, oil, gas, tourism, ag, I think the future looks pretty good. But with regard to coal in particular, I think that it's going to be looks rocky ahead. And so I think this is a time for us, as we always are, to remain conservative with regard to spending.
And, Mr. Chairman, one step further on that, too, and, of course, the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund comes more and more in play as we see these different volatility that exists in our minerals, not only from the volume side, which I think Craig is probably not really representing the way I see the volumes declining in natural gas, but the way we offset that, of course, is our permanent mineral trust fund and the revenues it generates for the state. But if you look at the percentage of those revenues in terms of funding the state's general fund budget, you know, it used to be running around 22%, 23%, 24%. Now we're down around 17%, 18%. So the obvious solution to that is to try to save more to build, which was the original intent of the permanent mineral trust fund, to build that fund so we can get it higher in terms of the percentage of revenues for our general fund from that fund. And the way to do that is to save more. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think anybody disagrees that those savings, what they have meant to us. I think it's, you know, the question is where the sweet spot is, for example, infrastructure. You know, the markets go up and the markets go down. And what was it, 2008 to 2009, the markets went down and the state lost several hundred million dollars. And, you know, we're playing in a world market with regard to those investments. And you know, in terms of, you know, what's a good bet as to stock Wyoming, in my mind. Wyoming is, I have more faith in Wyoming if it's a stock than a lot of what we see internationally. And so those returns have been excellent. I compliment the Treasurer's Office and many who work on that. But, you know, if you talk about infrastructure, I know that what a mile of road is worth. The markets go up and markets go down. I know what bridges and water mean to our state. I know what education means to our state. So it's a question of where we agree on that sweet spot. I think we do need to continue to save. I think we need to be fiscally conservative. But I also think, recognizing that the market can fluctuate up and down, that this is also a good time for us to be working on infrastructure needs in the state.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, since you're talking a little bit about natural resources, you had recommended $2 million for continued progress on orphan wells for the
$3 million.
$3 million, $2 million effective $2 million effective immediately, and $3 million of other fund for implementation. Has the Oil and Gas Commission that you sit on? Have you guys changed your rules recently with respect to bonding on orphan wells? Is that right?
No, we're working on that right now. We just today are submitting a letter and a proposal with regard to addressing orphan and idle wells. Depending upon how you evaluate the linear foot cost, depending upon whether you include with orphan and idle wells what the Oil and Gas Commission, I think, titles troubled wells, which are ones that, while not officially orphan or idle, look like they're perhaps headed in that direction. You know, the cost of addressing all those wells is $30, $35 million. And the problem, of course, is that, you know, the companies that continue to pay in on bonding that haven't had a problem, they're concerned about raising the bonding costs. But when you have a blanket bond of a total of $75,000 and you have several hundred or a thousand wells, we don't want to have the state left holding the bag on this. And so the plan for the $3 million, of course, that's not general fund. It is oil and gas money. But if you look at a four-year plan, which is what I'm proposing, an aggressive four-year plan to address that, because you see the state in the last several years, I mean, the amount of wells that we've plugged compared to the amount that are out there, we're not doing the job we need to do. We have to become much more aggressive on plugging those wells. And in 4 years, depending upon how many we plug and the linear foot cost, we would be short. And the meaning the state would be left holding the bag and would have that question of how we're going to fund the plugging of those wells. So to answer your question, the Oil and Gas Commission is working on that. The legislature is working on that. They're going to be looking at my letter and my proposal. I know that they'll make changes, and I welcome that. But we need a plan, and in my view, a four-year plan on how to plug hundreds and hundreds of wells rather than 20 every 2 years or 40 every 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
And I think actually Representative Nicholas was next, and then Representative Lanise, and then I think Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, could you give us an idea of what your feelings are about how we're dealing with the $1.2 billion unfunded mandate in the retirement account, and if you're agreeable to our proposal legislation and how we're going forward with that?
Representative, as we see the retirement, first let me just say, and I think you and I agree on this, there's sort of the legal side of it, but more importantly is sort of the ethical, moral side of it. We do not want to leave us shorthanded on retirement. The questions and concerns I have in retirement is that because you look at actuarial studies and as you change the factors that you include in there, they can change significantly. As you know, there was a change in terms of life expectancy, which I think is appropriate. And also, when you look at those numbers in terms of our rate of return, to assume an 8% rate of return is, I want to know what they're investing in to make that assumption safe. I think that needed to be changed. So you change that rate and you change the life expectancy, and all of a sudden it looks like you're whatever it was, 80%, now you're underwater at whatever, you probably know the percentage, 72% or whatever it may be. But I don't think, as I say in my message, I don't think we want to overreact or underreact to this. I think with the changes that you made last session and are proposing this session to fund that, I think that is the right direction. But when you start looking at what they do and they project out 10, 20, 30 years, you know, that is, you're really looking way deep into the tea leaves. But I do think it is appropriate for us now as a state to move forward with additional funds for that, just based upon what we know is legitimate life expectancy and a lower reasonable rate of return being expected.
Okay, I think Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, could you elaborate on your thinking on the roads and the denial of the $50 million general fund exception request for highways?
That was, we work with the Department of Transportation, and they wondered whether they should make that exception request, and I thought it was appropriate that they make that exception request of $50 million. The reason I thought it was appropriate is I wanted to have the meetings with them and have that consideration on the $50 million. As we see what the fuel tax has meant, we have a net over last biennium of, I think it's about $7 million better than we were last biennium. And we also see, I think it was November 24th, as an aside, gasoline prices were cheaper than they were before the fuel tax by a significant amount. So the Department of Transportation, we passed the fuel tax as a way to supplement what they were going to have. And I think with my recommendation, the amount is about right. But I would be open to looking at that in the supplemental to see whether they need more. As I supported the fuel tax, you've heard my arguments about the importance of maintaining that infrastructure for Wyoming and what it means. And I think that my recommendation represents just about the right place in terms of their funding going into the biennium. But we'll look at it again in the supplemental. That's where I'm at on that.
Okay. And I think it was Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, let's get back kind of what Chairman Bebout was talking about is the potential of the, some of the future things going on in minerals. I had an opportunity to go to a Chamber of Commerce dinner the other day in Newcastle and sat next to a fellow who was in that rare earth play up there, and they were having a lot of trouble with trying to get permits. And I'm just wondering, what have we done as a state to help that process along? Maybe what could we do as a state? Have you had any discussions whether we need to change any of our statutes or implement some kind of a program to move that process along a little faster? Because they just seemed like they were in neutral and just waiting for something to happen. I'm hoping that we've got a game plan to move that opportunity along.
Well, I guess first I'd say, Mr. Chairman, the Senator, I would say that they're having trouble getting permits. This would be the first I've heard of it, because we have met with them. Now, on top of that, you know, based upon where their mine is, the state worked to trade out land to give them a greater opportunity there with state land. So we've tried to accommodate them that way. Certainly, if they're having unreasonable delays in permitting on the state side, I will look into that. Like I said, this is the first that I've known about that. But I do think that you know, we've been very aware of what they're doing up there, very aware of the potential for economic development, not only for that area of the state but an entire state, and very aware that rare earth elements, what they mean in terms of our national economy and national security. So we. Like I said, if there's delays in permits, you're telling me something I should have known but didn't know until you mentioned that.
Okay, and I think Representative Escobel, and folks, we do have a pretty firm deadline right at noon, as the governor's got a commitment at noon downstairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Governor, did briefly want to touch base with you on your remark in your narrative that you did mention the $219 million that's available for legislative considerations in this budget. And it's in the capital renovation paragraph there that you did talk about supporting the renovation of the capital, but that the legislature should consider
the other needs of the occupants of the Capitol and where we should move while the Capitol is being restored. And, you know, just on my desk, I have three big books on, you know, the level one, level two designs of the Capitol, as well as a report on the state office, new state office building. And in here, it takes into account some of our rental payments that we're making compared to what the cost would be for building a new state office building. But you do say you support going forward with the Capitol renovation first over the state office building. But even with our meeting with management council, I still didn't really hear what their plan is for the occupants of the Capitol, as well as what the plan is for where the legislature would meet during the renovation of the Capitol. Just wanted to get a few more of your feedbacks about that.
Well, as you, Representative, thanks for the question, Mr. Chairman. As you know, there was a move afoot, I think it was 2 years ago, for a new state office building, which I resisted that. I thought at a time when we are uncertain somewhat of the future, it wasn't the time to build a new state office building. With the Capitol, I feel a little differently because we have actual, you know, safety issues, everything from fire suppression. So I am in favor of the Capitol renovation. The money that I left there, you know, it depends upon what we do, whether we expand tunnels under the Herschler, whether we provide swing space in the Herschler for the five elected and for the legislature, of where that goes. And I don't know, I have not heard from Representative Swanage or President Ross of here's the plan going forward from their opinion, from the legislative side. But I wanted to make sure, at least as it regard to the Capitol renovation, that $219 million, that I would agree that some of that is appropriate for the Capitol renovation, depending upon what we do. But I am not in favor now of building a new state office building, to try to answer your question directly. I think that we can find a way with swing space to accommodate the five elected officials and the legislature.
Okay. Any other questions? Now, the governor has to break here at noon, and we have some agencies planned. Is there any? Co-chair?
No, I think we ought to let the governor go to his commitment that he has.
I don't see any need for everybody has their questions all answered to come back at 1 or. Good. So we sure appreciate your message today, and we'll take your budget and do some work on it, I'm sure. And
really?
Hopefully as a group genius is what I call it, we'll make it better.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you always for your very good questions, and we look forward to working through this with you. Thank you for the time today.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your good work on this. Thank you.